Yes, so once again, welcome here at the next lecture at Frostcom 12. Next lecture, I'm pretty sure it's going to be great because it's Minto Joseph talking about Linux kernel debugging for sysadmins, which is quite an interesting topic and from my point of view. So just one more thing before we start. If you like the talk, or even if you dislike, which I don't believe, but please provide us some feedback, log on to the FRAP, to the program software on frostcon.de, and give us some feedback, because it really helps us to organize this event. So yeah, enough with the talk. Please give some warm hands for Minto Joseph.
Hello. So, how many sysadmins here? Good. How many kernel hacker? I saw one. Okay, you are going to answer the QA. So this talk is based on my experiments and experience based on my sysadmin job, like somebody who has been managing systems for quite a long time. So this is, I hope this will help sysadmins who are currently in the verge of trying to do something in kernel to do more. So I currently work with a Canadian company called Pythian. So I will start my talk. So this is the agenda of this, what I'm planning to cover, like some basic investigation methodologies and some common issues and some tools. Pretty simple. And why? Why should sysadmins do kernel debugging? Of course, to learn more about the systems we manage. Debug efficiently when you face an issue, and root cause analysis. This is becoming more and more important nowadays, with more focus on SRE, DevOps kind of workflows, integrating post-mortem analysis and everything in the workflow. So this is the thing which I'm going to cover. You all must have seen some user complaining, or maybe in the shape of a Nagios alert, seeing that, yeah, my system is not responding. I mean, the whole talk is based on this. So I have the investigation I have split into two, before reboot and after reboot. Why reboot? Because many times you would end up rebooting your system if you face a kernel issue. Not all the times, many times. But let's talk about that more. I'm just going to talk about stuff which we generally do. So you basically identify whether the claim is actually right, whether it is a system issue or a service issue. Like, yes, a user might be complaining, my app is not working, the system is not working. That doesn't mean that the system is down. You do the basic talking, you do the basic magic with your telnet ping toolset and see whether the issue is system or a service issue. Then you will check out whether what do you see in the screen? Like, if you have like any kind of user-provided console, you will check. If you have like a VM, you will check the VM console. KVM. Anybody heard of KVM? Like, somebody with a gray beard probably know. Right? It's this switch which we switch between different monitors and data centers. You check the screen and see whether what is the issue. If possible, network connectivity, definitely you will try to see how is the connectivity, whether the network connectivity issue is within the system. using ETS tool or ifconfig and logs, or you can check if there is any connectivity issue to the system. And if we check all of this stuff and we identify that it is a system issue, what do we do next? I mean, there could be cases where the system is totally stuck. You are able to connect to the system, but it's not responding at all. You can see something in the screen, or maybe nothing in the screen, but it is not responding to anything. Maybe or may not be you are able to connect to network. What would you do? You can try SysRQ. So why SysRQ? SysRQ is a kernel technology, a mechanism which will allow you to send keys. Generally, it is called magic keys, and it will allow the system to dump useful information. It will allow the kernel to do useful stuff like sync your file systems or even panic your kernel. Why that is useful, I will come to that later. But let's have a quick look at SysRQ. So SysRQ. How about now?
You could enlarge the font a bit, please.
Sorry?
The font a bit larger.
A bit more?
Can, yeah.
Okay.
It's better? Yeah, it's fine. It's better on the video.
Okay, so this is the SysRQ kernel CCTL parameter. You can enable it. Once you enable it, you can, if you have access to your keyboard, you can type Alt SysRQ and the related key. So let me type another way to send a SysRQ request would be echoing the parameter, echoing the value. For example, echo m to proc SysRQ trigger. It will dump the memory information to your syslog. Let's have a look. So you can see the memory information is dumped here. What can we do with this? I will talk about this later. I mean, how to make sense of this. Don't be alarmed with the ball of test. So we can also dump the thread state information of all the processes. Let's give it a couple of seconds. Okay. You can see the process trace information. You can see the process name. You can see the state of process, whether the process is sleeping or in uninterruptible sleep, which is D state, or which is in runnable state, which is R state. Then you can see the code path in which the process, the code path which process was executing. What to do with the code path? I generally, if I want to try understanding what is going on with this, I will just look at the kernel functions. These are the kernel functions. I will maybe go into the kernel tree. And so I have already run C tags here. A lot of people, oh yeah, it's a different window. How about, is it good?
Yeah.
So I have already done C tags here. It will basically create C tag information so that a text editor like Vim can have a look. For example, I'm just doing a basic VFS write. I'm just looking for it. So I can just go right into the code. I can look for, like, I want to see another instances of the code. I can just easily look. A lot of people do C scope. I don't use it because I'm not a kernel developer. So I don't have to search too much code. Okay, so that is SysRQ. We will talk about, how this can be more useful would be finding the arguments which are passed by one function to another, that will be interesting. Or finding the arguments for a, of a function, we'll come to that later. Let's go and continue. So after the reboot, we all check the syslog, of course, your var log messages, your var log kernel. Then you check the sysstat. I hope everybody have sysstat installed in your system. Even if you have your fancy metric system, definitely try to install sysstat, include that in your AMIs, your images. I'm pretty sure most of the people knows, but I'll just show. So sysstat includes sar command, which we can have a look at the system log information. System load information here, and you can see whether the load was in user space, system space, IO weight, all this stuff. These are stuff which we generally do. You can check memory, stuff like this. If anybody have more questions, you can ask after the talk, any of this, or like when we have QA. I'm pretty sure that many of you have interfaced with some OS vendors and have provided a VM core one time or another, if you're a sysadmin. So VM core is a memory dump of your Linux system. We'll talk about VM core later. Now, let's just see a few stuff like panics and kernel-related issues which you might see or you must have seen in your work life. So this is a normal panic. It's a very old panic. I chose it for a reason, because it's pretty straightforward and easy to explain. So this is a kernel bug at, and you can see the file name in the source code and the line number. So this panics generally happen when there is a condition called bug on in kernel source, and if your code ended up being there, this panic generally hits. And you can see I'm just showing this just to get you a bit more familiarized with the structure of panic, so the next time when you have a look at it, you make more sense out of it. So this was a CPU which was executing at that time, and the modules loaded in the system during the time of issue. You can see if a particular module is having any kind of flags, like proprietary or force loaded. You can see this. You can see the PID of the process which was running during the time. But a process cannot panic a kernel, period. A process behavior can trigger a panic, but a process from user space cannot panic a kernel. If that happens, there is something problem. The problem is in the kernel. Then, you can see the kernel version. You can see whether or not the kernel was tainted with any proprietary module or stuff. And this is the most important thing if you are starting with this. If you just want to Google it out, don't Google these. You just Google this. This is the instruction pointer. This was the function which was being executed when this panic happened. So in 64 bits, you will find ERIPs. In 32 bit, you will see EIPs. I'll skip the whole registry part here. And I will go to the call trace again. So this is the call trace, like the call trace which you have seen in the SysRQ third state output. You can see that there's a system call function, and it is either most of the or probably all of the system call related kernel calls are like this, sys underscore times or sys underscore the system call name. So in this case, two processes were trying to do something, and there was a race condition which caused the issue. We'll not get into how to debug a kernel panic. That's a very big topic, and I'm not 100% qualified to do that, but I can show you pointers on how to do that, and I have some specific knowledge about some specific part of subsystems, but definitely if you have any questions, I can try to point you to people or try to point you to resources. So this is a soft lockup. Again, why would a kernel panic happen? A kernel panic happens when kernel thinks that at this point of time, I cannot properly recover the system. Kernel might think that, yeah, at this point of time, I cannot, if I'm continuing, this might cause a data loss. In that case, that is when kernel causes a panic. That is a standard definition. There could be a lot of different logic below that, but this is the baseline. So next is a lockup, the soft lockup. Soft lockup doesn't need to always cause the system unusable. Soft lockup usually happens when kernel tries to evict a process from the CPU, but it is not able to, so it's continuously running for 10 seconds. So here you can see the instruction pointer is EIP because it's a 32-bit system. You can see the pattern is same. You can see the CPU, you can see the registry information, you can see the call trace. Here, one more thing you can see. You can see that some of this code is coming from one specific module. So or this specific code is coming from this module. So this is also kind of useful information. And I'll show you an example of hung task. Hung task happens when a process is in D state for more than 120 seconds. What is D state? D state is uninterruptible sleep. That basically happens when a process is waiting on I/O, most of the cases. There can be other cases as well, mostly I/O. So here the process is waiting on D state for more than 120 seconds. This behavior in some cases can be an expected behavior. Your process might be supposed to be waiting, like running, being on D state for a long time. There can be corner cases. In that case, you can just disable the hung task. Hung task necessarily doesn't make the system unusable, but many cases it can. Here also you can see the process, the process state, and the call trace. You can try to read through the kernel code and functions one by one and see how the code flows. So another is out of memory. I'm pretty sure that all of the sysadmins have seen an out of memory error. Here, I have chosen this specific because message because this is from a very old kernel, and I don't have to explain much. Nowadays, I would have to explain all new MA, all the new code-related changes, all those stuff here. But you can see it is dumping. This is the same information which is dumped by the SysRQ memory dump. So the pattern, it would look the same. Of course, it will have different information, but the pattern is all the same. You can see that you can see the number of active pages, number of inactive pages. Active and inactive pages basically mean that kernel uses a list called LRU, least recently used. It is used to identify whether a particular process is being, whether a page is currently used or not. If kernel think that it is active, it will be in the active list. And if a kernel want to free a particular page, it will first put it to inactive before it frees up. So you have the active and inactive pages. You have the dirty pages. Dirty pages are pages which are in the memory which have changed information, which are not written back. Write back is the pages, if I remember correctly, which are in flight, which has been currently written back to the system. This unstable is NFS specific stuff. NFS does have this unstable tree, which have pages which need to be written back. Of course, the free memory and the slab. Slab is basically kind of objects which are used, predefined in the kernel, so that you get contiguous, so the page allocations will be contiguous. So it it usually have the dentry level information. It will have it have all the kmalloc objects. You can check slab top command in your system to see slab information. Mapped is the mapped pages. It's basically any pages which does have a file backup, and then page table entries. It does have all the information on where the pages are in the memory. So this have like a list of pages, it's trying to show you where all the pages are allocated. Then you will see the different zones. You see DMA, normal, high mem. This is a 32-bit system. That's why you see all DMA, normal, high mem stuff. One thing, why did this system panicked? Because it does have a lot of memory. It does have almost free pages. It does have considerable amount of memory. Any idea? Why would this system face out of memory? When does a system face out of memory? Yeah. Sorry? When the system, normally when the system runs out of memory, right? The question is from me. Yeah. Okay. So you want to repeat my question or his question?
The answer, because otherwise you can't hear it. And if you say,
oh, okay.
Yes, that's right. Then
oh, yeah.
The
okay.
Screen, they just say, yes, that's right.
Okay. Let's continue. I will tell you why this system specifically panicked, because of the zones. Because each zone does, what are these zones? Traditionally we have DMA zones, normal and high mem. It's a bit complicated topic, but long time back when the DMA devices can only access, some of the devices can only access the DMA, so can only access up to, 16 MB of RAM. So for those devices, DMA zone was introduced, and rest of, then kernel mostly works in normal zone. Then high mem is used for mapping rest of the memory, because 32-bit only have, theoretically it can only have 4 GB of RAM. So it's a bit more complicated topic, but basically we have different zones like DMA, normal, and high mem. And in this case, each zone does have a few watermarks. One is free, min, and low. Now the thing is, when the free mem goes below min, that is when an out of memory happens in the end. That is a specific reason any out of memory happens. So when the free mem goes below low, the kernel will very actively try to reclaim memory using your pd flush, using your whatever the current daemon kernel is running, the kernel daemons, it will try to reclaim memory. And it will try to reclaim memory until the free reaches high. So in this case, even though there was high mem does have enough free memory, the normal zone didn't have enough free memory. So this was like a historical problem with 32-bit systems. Nowadays, we don't have to worry about it. I just use this example from a 32-bit system so that I can explain that there is something called zones in our memory, in the virtual memory. Then we have buddy allocator. Buddy allocator basically kind of show the kernel in each zones how much contiguous memory is available. So if you see, if more memory is allocated in 4 KB, the chance of the system being in a system memory being highly fragmented state is high. So when the more memory is here with larger chunks of memory, that means that the memory is less fragmented. So that is one more thing. So if some of the applications probably need contiguous memory, very large contiguous memory. So when it tries to allocate like a contiguous piece of memory, it can have page allocation failures and stuff like that. Mm. And yeah, you have the swap information, then you have the process which was killed. For killing a process, normally a function called badness is used. It does use different logic, like a set of logics to allocate points to a different process in the system. For example, if a process is niced, it will be given less priority to killed. If a process is a root, if the process is run by root, the chance of it is getting killed is less. So the badness value is based on that. And currently, in the current kernel, we have OOM score and OOM ADJ parameters, which can kind of tune this behavior for each PIDs and make sure, for example, if you don't want your MySQL to be killed, you can pass a value to the OOM score, like proc PID OOM score, and you can set it to 0, I guess, then it, or minus 17 or something, then it will make sure that whenever the OOM kill happens, your favorite process will not get killed. Okay, then we have normal hangs. Like hang is a very bad term, actually. I mean, it's a very abstract term. But here I have just listed like hardware issues. Like there can be machine check exceptions or error detection and correction, EDAC stuff. If you find anything like something like machine check events, you can have a look at varlog MC log and probably contact the vendor if it is a bare metal system, if it is a hypervisor, if it's a VM, check the hypervisor, talk with the hypervisor vendor maybe. It doesn't many times happen. If it happens in a virtual machine, it's probably a bug. Then there can be CPU, memory, or IO utilization, which can cause a hang. So these OOM or hang task, these are also kind of resource allocation issues. But you can also use SAR, tools like SAR to identify issues, which is caused by high utilization of resources. Let's get into VM Core a bit. So VM Core is, for dumping a VM Core, we need a crash kernel parameter in the grub. And traditionally, long time back, it was only netdump and disdump available. Netdump was dumping the memory over network, and disdump was dumping in the local disk. Currently, kdump is capable of dumping it everywhere. So now, kdump is configured in etc kdump. If kdump can only dump when there is a panic, kdump dumps the virtual the memory information or the memory of a system when there is a panic. So if you specifically want to debug one of the previous issue in detail, if you don't understand from the screenshots, if you don't understand, you can intentionally panic this kernel. I'm not talking about every time you set this parameter. I'm just suggesting that if you have a recurring issue, if you want to avoid like an ongoing issue, if you want to have a deeper investigation, you can pass this parameter. So when there is a soft lockup or an OOM or a hung task, panic the system so that KDAM will dump a VM core. You can also do alt sysrqc. Previously, I dumped a system thread information. So instead of that, if I'm doing a C, this will panic the system. I'm not going to do that now. And that will dump a VM core. If by default, it will dump in var crash. So let's have it. What's the time? Okay, so let's have a quick look at VM core. So I have a VM core here, which I have. So this VM core I have dumped from this system. And for analyzing a VM core, I need a command line tool called crash. Crash is basically a wrapper around the GDB tool, which you probably know. And this VM Linux I have extracted from kernel-debug info package, which does have the debug symbols, unlike your VM Linux file in your slash boot. So you can see the GDB information. It will give you the basics, basic information on the kernel, the when it crashed, it was a long time back. So it's the uptime of the system during the time of the panic. So you can see that the panic was caused by a sysrq dump. You can see the kernel release information, the host name. You can see the processes which are running in the system at the time of issue. You can see the PID information. You can see the task. You can see the state of different processes. RU is runnable processes. IN is sleeping. If it is UN, if there is a UN, that is uninterruptible sleep. If I want to see the trace of one particular process, I can just do BT. PID. Another interesting thing would be the memory state during the time of issue. You can see when the system was hung or when the system was in panic state, what was happening in the system. So this was the process which actually panicked the system. This was on context. You can see that it is bash because I ran the command from bash. I did echo c proc sysrq trigger from bash. You can see that there's a VFS write in the proc file system. Now, what is VFS? VFS is an interface with between different file systems and the kernel. So here, what I would like to, so I will kind of demonstrate how to find an argument and which is passed. So you can see the stack information like this. So this will dump the complete stack of this call trace. You can see that after sys write, it's calling VFS write, and there is stack information here. From this doesn't make sense. This looks invalid. So let's see what does VFS write have. So this is the code. I can just go to the source as well. So you can see that It does have a struct as struct file as first argument. So I'm going to pass that struct file, and I'm going to use that memory. You can see the structure, the whatever there is in the structure. So here you can see the UID, the PID, it's probably wrong, all this information. What's interesting here is the dentry. Dentry is the storage place of your directory structure. For instance, it's one job of dentry. So let's check struct dentry and see what is in there. Typo. Look, you can see the name. So I was just looking for this. You can see in the dentry does have the information of. We obviously know that I run sysargy trigger, so it made sense more to dissect this particular thread, this particular process. You can see that this was the name of the, here also, the DI name also, we can see that's name of the file it was being accessed. Another thing which you can do is probably look at the task details. For example, here there's a yum stuff. So there is a command called task. You can see the task related information, timestamp. You can do a lot from this, but all the task related information is here as well. So. Sorry? Okay. So, this is basically what I was planning to cover. I think I was super fast. Yeah, good. Any questions?
Is there a help command?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have the help. We have runq. So runq does show you whatever processes which were running in each CPU during the time. It's not whatever process which were running, whatever process which were in the runnable state, and the current process as well. And then what else do we have? What else I am familiar with? Yeah, I think the Vim information. Yeah, of course, the mount. So the VFS mount information is also there. So if you want to see that. I probably have to get it from a stack, not from here. Yeah, so you can, I have to check whether, I think it is VFS underscore mount, but I don't remember exactly, but yeah, VFS mount. So you can see, you can parse through the mount information as well. Yeah, stuff like that. Oh, IPCS is there, your shared memory information. Yeah, any other questions? Yeah?
You mentioned dirty pages and also pages being in state right-click. Where are these pages being written to?
Can you please repeat?
Yeah, paper pages being dirty or also being written back somewhere, but where are they being written back?
Disk. They come from?
Paging space.
Yeah. It's
not necessarily. When you end that file, it doing pages, they're my dirty and bring back to running space.
So in general, they have some representation on this?
Yes. I didn't understand. Okay. Probably you got your answer. Yeah.
MF files.
Okay. Any other questions?
Is there a way to reinitialize the virtual terminal? Most of my personal problems are related to the XML, and I have no console at this moment, and I don't know my current IP address, so I can't access my system by the network, and I need some way to reinitialize my
Yeah, so you're talking about if you have a UI. One thing I forgot to mention, if you want to run any of this SysRQ, you probably need to switch to one of the terminals, like Alt, Control Alt, F1, and then,
It doesn't switch in this case. So
okay.
I think it's an hardware issue, but I...
So one thing you can do probably is if... Okay, so the question is you're having a UI interface, and if you face a hang, how do you recover? If you're having this issue, and if it is an ongoing issue, and you suspect that it is like large number of D-state processors, lot of I/O, or if you want to find what is happening, and or specifically if it is a load average issue, there is a solution. There is a tool called HangWatch. What HangWatch does is you can just install the HangWatch. It will monitor the load average. Load average is a very tricky subject. Load average doesn't mean there's a problem. Load average is a calculation based on the runnable processes and uninterruptible sleep process, basically R state and D state processes. So if your load average is, for example, above 10, the HangWatch will detect that, and it will automatically run a SysRQ. Like whichever switch you want to configure, you can configure it in the HangWatch, and you can do that. That is one possibility. Another thing is that if kernel itself have some other method or like methods to deal with this, you probably must have seen NMI watchdog. If there is a problem which would affect the interrupts, it's non-maskable interrupts. If the NMI interrupts are not incrementing over time, kernel itself will dump an NMI watchdog error. And if you have configured that NMI watchdog should panic the kernel, it will panic the kernel. So the kernel also have its own mechanism. But specifically, if your problem is with UI, I think you probably try to connect through SSH. Can you do that and do your commands? Yeah, you're saying you have a system which you use like mostly for UI, like GNOME or something.
Sometimes if I connect or disconnect output devices or monitors, HDMI or something, then the system freezes from my point of view. So all monitors are blank, and I have no point to interact with.
Okay. So, are you kind of like able to, if it's a GNOME terminal, I think you can just do, I think, Alt F2 and press R, which will refresh the terminal, refresh the UI, if it's a GNOME, GNOME. Okay, so nothing is moving. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is a request K, which all processes related to your terminal, so this might
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trinet console. So you at least see the crash dumped out on the network, or you could use the core issue stuff. Depends on whether the kernel actually crashed or only the GPU. Okay.
As mentioned, I don't know the current IP address of my system.
I mean, you can, after you recover the system, you can check the logs and see what was happening in the, I mean, you can find something from the logs, and based on that, you can continue in investigation as well. I mean, there is no one way to do things. You just need to improvise based on what you have.
Yeah. Thank you.
Anything else? Thanks for answering the questions. Anything else? Good.